And my guess is that if they had those things, you still would probably go to San Francisco first. Okay, yes.
I'm sort of right now got a 56 filled in line and looking at upgrading to a team one. Besides the fact that, you know, calling my provider to help.
Okay. Chris, could you move the LCD over to the iPad?
Yeah. And now, so switch out to
the question is, in terms of, I have a 56K line today and I want to upgrade it to a T1 line or a fractional T1 or something. Basically, what you're doing is electrically changing from DS0 technology to DS1 technology. Everything you have goes away and everything is replaced from CSU to CSU. There'll be no piece of it that stays the same.
What as far as on the iPad side, brother?
Nothing.
Okay.
And the question is, what about as far as programming on the iPad side, what changes? Nothing. And the reason is, you didn't change the wire type, you didn't change the encapsulation type, you didn't change the routing, you didn't change anything but how fast the wire went. Because it's a synchronous circuit and the clocks are derived from the CSUs, once you've set the CSUs up for the new clock speeds, it's over. The data just comes out the V35 port a little faster. Or goes into it a little faster. And you don't change anything on the iPad or on a router you would plug it into at all. But from CSU to CSU, including the CSUs, absolutely everything will be changed when you change from DS0 to DS1. A different CSU, a different piece of wire, a different circuit in the phone company, everything about it will be changed because its technology is a complete change. Yes?
This is actually off the subject you're on here. It's backboard route packet. Why would I come to the iPad? Why not talk to my RAS services on my inbox?
This is a pretty specific question, and it's not a single possible answer there, so that's one I'd like to take a shot at saying that's a tech support question, probably more than a question for this class. Absolutely, and my suspicion is that you've got some setup problem wrong there with routing or with something. I don't know what it would be. As you can see, there's a lot of possible places to look. And what we'd have to do is take that as an independent problem and troubleshoot the symptoms. You've asked me a question in the same category as if yesterday somebody said, my DNS doesn't work, why? I look it up and I don't get an answer, why? And as you saw yesterday, the answer to that is you take a specific problem like we did yours yesterday and we walk it down and find the reason. That's the only way you can approach any of this. So what you have to do is structure that out, lay it out. We'd have to take that problem, spend the time to really lay out all the pieces of it, and then we'd walk through and do tests and see, just like you do anything, you put the pieces together and work it out. But the answer, as you can see here, again, and I know that every time this gets to be your personal problem, this is one of the things I'm trying to knock you loose from in this class. Every time it gets to be your personal problem, it gets a lot more intense because you're on the line. It's real. It's not theoretical anymore. But it isn't different. And the way you approach it is to realize this is just a set of building blocks. And if it's not working, you don't have the right pieces stuck together in the right way. And that's what's wrong. Now, there's so many pieces. When you ask somebody like me, okay, I do this and it doesn't work, what's wrong? The answer is, I don't know until I spend an hour with you looking at it. We have to sit down and just start at one end and take it step by step. How far can you get? Okay. Now, why can't you get to the next step? Let's just look at that piece. I'm trying to get five steps down the line, but don't look there. How far can you get? Now let's try to get to the next place. Let's try to get to the next place. And pretty soon we've walked our way all the way down all the stuck together pieces and presto, it's all better. And we found out what was wrong at each stage. And the fact that it's an ISDN modem or it's a DS0 line or it's a T1 line doesn't change any of this. We tend to think it takes a whole different set of techniques to approach it if we change a piece in the puzzle. It's the same technique. You start at one end and you go as far as you can. And somewhere it stops. First thing you're trying to do is find out, where did it stop? How far did it get before it stopped? Once you find that out, why did it stop here? And you peck away at that piece, and you fix that. Sometimes that was the only thing, and it's all better. Other times you find, okay, I fixed that, and now I get here, and it stops. And we work that one. That's really the only way to address these problems. None of them have a simple answer of, oh, you can't connect to your RAS server? That's because you didn't put line 3 in your configuration file and stick a letter A in it. It's not like that. It's just not like that. And that's what I'm trying to get across in this class, is you have to methodically, every piece is simple, but there's a ton of them. And if one of them's wrong, everything's broke. And so you have to start at one end and just walk. Start somewhere where something works and aim towards where it doesn't and just try to walk your way in, one stepping stone, one little piece of wire, one tinker toy at a time. And that's techniques to work at it. The question is, if I'm putting in something like an ISDN LAN bridge, is there any advantage to my having the same piece of equipment on my end that my customer has on his end? There are two advantages. Number one, if you've learned how to configure yours, you can help him configure his. That's not trivial. It's not a trivial advantage because these things are very complicated to configure. You're sitting here in this class with me trying to tell you how to configure things. I'm going to tell you how to do it on an iPad, and you have a Cisco router, and I tell you it's the same thing. And you're going to tell me, not on your life, is it the same thing? I'm telling you, no, you just got a routing table, put those three entries in. And you're saying, how? And I'm saying, well, hell, it's your piece of equipment. How do I know? You just got to find out how to put those in the routing table. Like, that was always the hard part. And so the advantage to having the same equipment, really, in my mind, the biggest advantage is that when he has a problem, which he will, on how to set it up, you can help him. This is why large backbone companies and stuff will say, put a Cisco at your end of our line. I won't let you put anything else there. The reason is because then they know how to... when you call them with a problem, which they know you will, they know how to deal with your piece of equipment because it's the one they know. And it's that same exact issue. And that's a pretty big advantage. And I don't want to downrate it. The other one is that if it's newer types of equipment, in their infancy, there tend to be some protocol disputes develop about how to do things, and some of them don't play together. In LAN bridges today, most of them will, because your router protocols are the same, and you can make them work. I don't want to get in here and start walking down the does somebody make a good something list, because there's 10,000 pieces of equipment and I don't want to play that game. I will make the following statement. There's almost no crap in this arena. When somebody tells you a Tilink CSU, a DSU is crap, at the level you're used to at the consumer product level thinking of crap, this is great. There are no $4 pieces of equipment, and there are no crap, because it's the $4 pieces of equipment that tend to be the crap. And it's just, the differences in really good equipment and what people would call bottom of the line, that bottom of the line is better than top of the line in consumer level equipment, is my statement. You don't have to worry about buying something that's bad. What you worry about more is it too expensive? Does it not do what I wanted it to do? Those are really the issues. The issue of equipment in this arena today, and this could change because as this stuff balloons out, people are going to start trying to get cheaper and cheaper equipment, and I'm sure crap will start to show up. But today, I still haven't really seen anything that I would call crap on the level of it's just not technically good enough to do the job. I call a lot of it crap because it takes way too much of my time when I use it. But once I get through that, it runs fine. I mean, it works great. It's just way too obscure. It's got a lot of very odd-looking pieces that I don't know why they're there until I spend way too much time figuring them out. And so that's I'd say, as far as does so-and-so make good equipment, good in this arena, in my mind, has to be very redefined. Because good, if I'm talking about a modem, Cardinal modems are crap. GVC modems are crap because you can't make them work. You're just never going to get them to work. If you are doing anything but plugging them onto a Windows machine and dialing out, they're not usable. They will malfunction. You put them on a dial-in setting, they will have to be reset 3 times a day. They will lock up. They will not work. That's what I call crap. Okay, and you won't find that kind of stuff in this arena. as I said, as it gets more popular, you might, but you just don't. And that's the difference, because those are consumer items. They're made to make themselves for $3 less at CompUSA. This stuff isn't there. And that's why you don't see that. It doesn't have that kind of pressure on it right now. As the market builds, it probably will gain it over time, but it doesn't have it now. And, yeah, I know, but CSU DSUs are a whole lot simpler piece of equipment than a modem. This CSU DSU ought to cost $75. That's all that's really in it.
Why do I buy that $75?
Because they don't sell that many. If they sold as many of these as they sell 28K modems, it would cost less than a 28K modem. Yes?
So I just threw up something here. If you like that coffee for everybody around, you're going to have a problem.
You know, that's probably not a bad idea since you're here. We'll turn you into a resource for this class I didn't plan on having, so yeah.
Okay. Well, there's a term here you're talking about terms for the iPad that I didn't know about. You ever heard of return loss levels on a pre-run?
Well, I know that there's that they discuss that when they run T-Bird tests, but yeah. No, that's about all I know. Okay. Because what you're saying is that's the one that tips you to this problem. Okay. Yeah, and that's good. And it's sad that consumers have to be educated to this level on something like this technology, but you're hearing it from a man who sat in the other end of this room. I didn't know that till just now. He was the guy on the other end of these blazing phone calls that we call him and tell him his line is crap.
Yeah,
speaking of crap. Okay. Okay. We'll make that up and copy it and hand it out, because if we have the problems, unfortunately, it's your problem until you badger them enough to fix it. Truly, to some degree, if you feed them a few buzzwords, they suddenly say, oh, I may not be able to snow this guy. It really does have an effect.
Well, my T1 stand went in kind of silly.
Yeah. It's because they knew who you were, right? Anyway, just before lunch here, I'd like to start on the iPad itself. We've now got the theory. Now you know everything, theoretically, that we want to do. There's nothing left about the internet, theoretically, you don't know. It may take you a while to realize you know it, but you know all of it now. So we're going to start by saying, how does that relate to an iPad? How do I do these things with an iPad? Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, I was wondering if you
could
get your internet service.
Actually, ultimately Sprint, but I'm vice president of the Colorado Internet Co-op, which is a group up in Boulder that started a couple of years ago to build up a group of people to do service. And so we have a T1 line from here to Boulder, at which point it goes into a T3 line to Fort Worth to Sprint. It's not a natural situation that would exist outside of Colorado. We started that outfit up there to build into a bring decent internet into Denver and make it available low cost. And if you live in Denver, you can get T1 service for them for $500 a month plus the cost of your local loop.
Oh, God.
But the local loop from here to Boulder is about $800 or $900, so if you know, it's actually $1,450 a month if I have US West run a line from here to Boulder, but I knew enough to run one from here to downtown and get up onto the IDG fiber loop and get up to Boulder and put the pieces together. You have to know a lot to know these things, and that's it. So that's how you go through all this, and that's my education that I wrote up in the magazine 2 years ago about how I learned all that the hard way. It's what all these scars here from the baseball bats in the face are all about. But this scar is from being stupid. That's another thing. But the answer is that, you know, the Sprint's the ultimate backbone provider for us here. And while they're having troubles and while they're having their struggles, I still think today they're the best backbone. But it's less dramatically so than it used to be.
I was wondering which one you thought was better, Sprint's backbone or NCI's backbone?
Between those two, I think Sprint's is definitely better. Yep. MCI someday will have a good backbone when they build all the stuff they say they already have. Yes?
I just wanted to say, we had some fun here about 3 weeks ago. I was here in Denver, but this is a traveling show. Tech Data had exposition.
Yes.
They brought all the routers. They're very,
whoops,
you know, for the staff, they brought the
Okay?
We actually got to have hands on
Right. That's a very good. That's very good. The tech data. I don't know how widely they're doing that, but if it comes around, it is a very good. Yeah. That is a good thing. It is like a candy store, yes, and this stuff can get that way. When you start talking about iPad configuration, there's three files that you really need to worry about. The main one is iPad.ctl. Everything in the way of iPad configuration begins in iPad.ctl. And anything else in configuration that comes up will be a result of something you started here. The file we're looking here is a hacked version of the one we ship with the unit. You'll notice it's got a lot of comments in it. We tried to put a lot of commentary in this file about what each piece does because I'm assuming everyone is like me. When I go to do something, I'll either read the manual, or if I find an example, I'll take it and start hacking on it and try to make that work. So, and by the way, I don't read the manual. But, I'm assuming that's a pretty common tendency. If you can make it work that way, that's how you'll do it. So we tried to put an awful lot of comments in this file to try to help this file be examples. The result is there's a lot of clutter in it as well. There's a lot of pieces to it that are just there to be examples of things you're not planning to do. So you're always free to delete any of those out of there that you don't want when you finally get yours. But the top of this file really tells you what you're going to do in here. Configure it. You're going to add or remove server capability. Do you want the iPad to have Telnet, FTP, Finger, SMTP, POP3, DNS, Web? What do you want it to be in the way of its own servers? Do you want any of them active, and if so, which ones? And then you'll configure some of them that need some slight configuration. Then you're going to define interfaces. Remember, ultimately, the iPad is a router. The iPad is predominantly a router. And so you address the iPad's world from the router part out when you configure it. And you look first at the fact that it's a router. So you have to define interfaces. Why? Because a router's world is its interfaces. Routing. Then you build any route table entries you're going to put in statically. And finally, you specify what logging you want it to do. And ultimately, that is all you do to configure an iPad. Everything you do is in one of these four categories. A lot of it's up there in add, remove server capability, and implied in that is programming the server action the way you want it. If you're saying, how many pop boxes do I have and what are they, you're programming the Popmail server. How many web servers do I want? I want four web servers to have these IP addresses and these domain names. You're programming web servers. So, but this is really it. So when you get into it, you have to, it helps sometimes, for me at least, to put things in categories and try to remember at least which pond am I playing in. And the number one thing you're going to do with an iPad is its interfaces and its routing. And when you plug something new into it, that's what you go back to. You're going to have to do something in interfaces and routing again. Now, the first thing you're going to do is tell the iPad who he is. You're going to give him a host IP address and a host name. And that's basically, in this great world of the internet, who is me? And all of the servers, let me know when lunch shows up. Okay, it's not here yet? Okay, so just, we'll go until it gets here, and then we'll interrupt and go to lunch when it gets here. All of its servers and everything will default to being this address if you don't tell them to be some other address instead. They will assume that this is sort of becomes the default persona of the iPad. In general, you will want the iPad to have an address that's on the Ethernet network that you're plugging it into, but there really, you can make it be any address you want it to be. But sort of in general, you'd like it to look like it's a workstation on your Ethernet. Like it's that way, its servers look like they would be in a server computer plugged into the same network. Now you define what servers you want. These are the ones that you can pick from. And you take your server line, and all you do is list all of the servers in the iPad that you would like to have turned on. Any you do not list are not turned on. As soon as you list them, they are turned on. If you turn one on and then don't give it some piece of configuration it needs, it will complain. To some degree, you can configure things like an FTP server by saying FTP and trying to start it up, and every error message tells you to do something, do that, and move your way to the next error message, and then you'll have an FTP server when there aren't any more error messages. It may or may not be exactly what you want, but that usually will get the job done. I've tried where possible to make the system work that way, so you can just sort of blunder through it and end up having something running. Help command. The iPad was built, and there's some considerations on it that come from the fact that we made the bulletin board system TBBS for many years before we made an iPad. And it seemed natural that a number of our customers that had TBBS would want to plug it into the iPad to put it on the internet. So there's some parts of the iPad's actual configuration. I guess I'll turn this off momentarily so I don't blow my nose on the tape. Some parts of the iPad configuration relate to things that have no meaning if you're not going to use it in that connected state or in some variation of it. The iPad has built into it a terminal server that if you take any of its RS-232 lines, plug them into like a dumb terminal and hit enter, you'll get a command prompt and you can actually telnet out from that and FTP out from that and do some things. That was really built in there so that you could plug those lines into a BBS, use our interchange program, and do that from a menu entry on the BBS. Now, it'll work any way you want to hook it up, but that's why it's in there. It's largely, we weren't thinking about hooking it to a BBS. That piece of functionality probably wouldn't even be in the device. The help file here just says, I put a directory with a whole list of help files that if you're at that terminal server command prompt, there's a whole help system where you can say question mark and start learning about pieces of what you can do from there. And this just tells it where you put all those files. The domain command. There's two parts to the DNS server, as you remember from yesterday, I'm sure. The resolver and the server. And because the iPad has clients in it that do things like email, and you can FTP out and telnet out, it needs a resolver for anything it does going out to the outside world that requires a domain name. That resolver can be pointed at any domain server you want to point it at. The server equals address says this is the server the resolver will ask to do its work for it because it's a stub resolver. Just like all good stub resolvers, it needs a server to help it do all the hard part of being a resolver. Generally speaking, if you enable the server inside the iPad itself, this will be its own address. You'll say use your own server for your resolver. You don't have to. Those are completely separated functions, and you can aim that at some other server just fine. And if you do not enable the DNS server as a server by putting the boot command on, if you leave this off, or if you don't put DNS up here on the server line, you don't have a DNS server active, then you have to point this resolver at some other server or it can't work. But in general, the assumption is that you'll make a server on this box and point it to itself. But it's separated out this way, so you have the flexibility to either do that or not. And that's the domain command. DNS cache command, the server can overflow to a disk cache to save and remember things it's looked up, the resolver and the server. And this is just a command that says, where on what disk drive should I put that file and what should I call it when I overflow that cache. This tells, it gives you the ability to stick it anywhere you want on your system. Pretty simple. Now, when you configure web servers, and this came up yesterday, so I'll address this a little bit. This is how you make a web server show up on the iPad. This is 100% of what you have to do to make a web server run. You say, I want a web server. Here's the disk directory, which is the home directory for that web server. Here's the IP address that this web server responds to. If you leave this off, it will respond to every address that the iPad can respond to. Or you can make it respond to only one by putting it here, and it does not have to be the same as any other address this iPad responds to. So you simply make up a new IP address, and it looks like you just put a whole new web server on your system with its own address, and that's all it is. This is a very powerful feature for if you put up like business web pages and people want their own domain name addresses. You just keep giving each one a new Class C address, give their domain name, www.theirdomain.com points to this IP address, and it's their web server. Yes? By server number, you mean the IP address? Okay. Yes. Okay. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Right. Basically, I think so. I'm going to restate it, and then you tell me if I'm answering your question or not. I think I understand your question, and that is basically, this is the concept of what I call it's called multi-homing by people because multi-homing is what you do to servers like Unix boxes to make this happen. But when the iPad does this, it does it in a very different way. If you multi-home an NT box or you multi-home a Unix box, it will respond to all those addresses for all functions. When you multi-home a web server in the iPad, you have just made a web server with that address. You did not make an FTP site with the same address. You did not make anything else have that address. So what you did was create what looks like a standalone dedicated web server. You can ping it, you can web to it, and that's it. Unless you make this address have other meaning for FTP, which you can do, it won't. So, I think what you're asking is, if I have a.com and b.com and c.com, normally a.com will come to this box, to its default address, because I've made it that way so I can FTP a.com or I can send email to a.com or whatever. And www.a.com is normally done because it's a different machine with the web server and I point to a different address. And then if I www.a.com, I normally don't go to the web server. I go somewhere else. What this does is give different web servers different addresses so that I can have www.a.com be 200, www.b.com be 201, and because I point to different disk directories, they're completely separated web server structures, and it's like I have a web server for each one that's independent. I don't know if the answer to your question is in there yet or not.
Let me restate the question. If I ping newdomain.com,
right,
and I ping www.newdomain.com,
right,
are both of those things going to return that address right there?
Depends on how you set up your DNS. When you set up DNS, each one of those has its own A record, and you can make them be the same address or different addresses. If you make them be the same address, then yes, they will both go here. Yes, as many as you want.
No memory constraint there?
I won't say no memory constraint, but you're not going to run out. It takes about, I think, about 1.5K per instance.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. That's how you can set up multiple.
So you can have, you can easily have 50 of them on here. I know that.
You still have to have that, the first two parts of the being done by the internet.
Again, this is back to, keep in mind the IP address is separate from the domain, and when you have the name to your server, what the name comes to mean is based entirely on what you make up, want it to mean, and put in your domain file. And you can make it do anything. You can make a name mean anything. By the way, this is the secret behind George Peace, who sells mail server access and will let you have your own virtual news server. And his news server has an address in Pennsylvania. But I can make news.esoft.com, I put it in my domain, and I give it the IP address of his server in Ohio or in Pennsylvania. If somebody does www.esoft.com, they come to my web server here in the room, they do news.esoft.com, they go to a system in Pennsylvania, but they both come under esoft.com. Why? Because I put them in my DNS file that way. That's right.
Thousands.
And thousands of different news servers all end up going to those servers that he rents as bulk news access out of Pennsylvania. And the reason you can do that to your customers, that's your server, because they went to news.esoft.com to get to it. That's the phone book is the human side, and it means what you say it means. The name turns into the ad. Any name under your domain turns into any address you say it does by what you type in. I could make mit.esoft.com go to the computer at MIT. I just put that in my domain name, and then it comes to be. Yes. That's correct. Let us add another web server here. We just sold a business web page. And this is this Joe's Garage is who we sold this to. So we're going to make a disk directory, and let us say that we want to maintain that on our server. We don't even want that on this disk drive. So it's going to be on f:// garage, and everything from that directory down, subdirectories, are all his web structure. We're going to put his HTML files there, his GIF files, his picture files, everything about his web page structures. Going to go on the server F drive on the server in the garage directory and down. And we say, that's going to be 207. That's we just made a web server. I built a computer over here. I put all the web stuff on it, and you can see it sitting here, right? This is the computer his machine's on, and it's all real happening virtually inside the iPad. And we're going to say, and he's somebody who used a different web server package to play with, and he doesn't like his default file being called indexed. He likes it being called default.htm. That's what he thinks a default web page looks like to him, because he used HTTPD when he was playing around in school to learn how to build web pages. And we don't want to confuse him, because we're going to give him FTP access, and he's going to put his own pages up. So let him have default.htm as his default instead of index.htm. Yes?
Will that always be known? Any www server, will that always be www.domain.whatever?
Okay.
Let's
go through this again, because I thought I went through this all yesterday, and it's pretty obvious now. I'm going to have to straighten it out. And it's okay. That's what we're here for. When you made your DNS zone file, you had like esoft.com, SOA, then you had NS and MX, and then you had A. And then later on, you put in things like lab.esoft.com, and you said A is 199.45.143.2. I can make these are literally anything I want them to be. Can I have 50 names with the same address? Yes. Yeah. Right, he would have, it could be that, or let's say Joe wanted to give you some more money and have you send in and get his name as jgarage.com.
Okay.
So you go off and you register jgarage.com for him, okay? And you now go to your DNS server, having sent into the internet the form, and they point it back, okay? And they point it back to your server for jgarage.com, so now you're authoritative for it. And you put in jgarage.com, SOA, NS, NS, and now you put jgarage.com, A, 199.45.137.143.207. And now if I go to in my browser and type in jgarage.com, I'll get that web server. Now, he wants the www, so I add another one. I say www.jgarage.com, A, and I put the same number down. Now he gets that web server either with www.jgarage.com or just jgarage.com. Let us say that I want him to call netscape.jgarage.com. And get there. I put an A record in his file, it says that, and it happens. That's what DNS is all about. And literally, because you're making up this phone book, the key to the fact that you're making it up is you get to make up it to mean anything you want it to mean. Yes?
I think we're approaching the question I asked yesterday.
Which is? Yes, we are getting very near to them. Well, I'll give you an example of how that works right now. Now, this is a web server light. And what that means is it's a publishing-only web server. The iPad does not do forms or CGIs. It only publishes. It can publish anything. You can have music, you can have pictures, you can have video, but it's all one way. It's publishing, pure and simple. Can't take anything back. And it can't run CGI programs that let you do cute web extensions. But for publishing, it's a full 100% everything you want it to be web server. But let us say that you got Joe's garage here, and you're on, and we're happy. And he decided, however, that he needs forms. And let us say you've brought up an NT server and O'Reilly website like we did here, and it's sitting over there. And you could give him a subdirectory on that, but then it would be www.esoft.com/joes/whatever, and that suddenly we don't have a real web server anymore to the public eye. So we have an image to uphold here. I still want it to be www.jgarage.com, but I want it to be on that Netscape box or that NT box over there. And multi-homing NT, while it's possible, is definitely not for the faint of heart. And to do it past three or four addresses is not only not for the faint of heart, it's not for those who want their machine to run all the time. So, and the same thing is true if you've got a Unix server for your web server. I mean, some sort of an industrial strength web server you're going to build, it's going to go on an operating system that doesn't multi-home easily. So let us say that we want to use the iPad as a web assistant for the sole purpose of multi-homing a web server on a box that doesn't easily multi-home. That's where you get to the redirect file. If on the default line, I put in a file that ends in the extension RED. This can be any file name I want. It means that in this directory, there'll be a file called RED, and in that file will be one single line. And it will say http://anything I want. And what it means is, this web server, every request made to this web server is turned into a request that has that stuck on it. And that's a redirect. And you can use RED files anywhere. You can make the publishing part here and the CGI on the other machine and just call it when he needs the CGI part. The beauty of web servers is they don't have to be all in one place. If I get anything across in this class, it's the internet allows you to put anything anywhere at the piece part level. And the World Wide Web is absolutely that way. I mean, you're used to putting a link in the middle of your page that references somebody else, right? Well, why can't the somebody else be another machine of yours? So when I click the link that's the form, just run the form over on the other machine. But if you want the whole thing on the other machine, you use a redirect file. And we do that here, for instance, esoft.com is our main system with the bulletin board on it. It's not our web server. But I want somebody to be able to say www.esoft.com or to say just esoft.com and still get our web server if they're coming in with Netscape. So I have one on our esoft.com machine that has a redirect file that just sends them to www.esoft.com. Yes?
Yeah. Somehow I started getting here and I lost myself about 3 months ago, so I'm going to try to pull myself out.
Okay, pretty soon, because now we're now missing the food. The lunch is here. Multiple redirect files.
Pre-configured multiple redirect files so that you don't have to keep on taking down your iPad to...
Oh, where you're saying you stick a lot of them up, don't refer to them so that you can just go and stick them in your DNS and...
Is that possible?
Sure. It's possible, but you're going to have to plan real carefully because you're going to have to lay it out so you can do that. As soon as you put them in, they'll be active and they'll redirect somebody there if they come to this IP address. They just won't naturally know to do it until you put a DNS in that matches. Yes? If you want to use the iPad to make the different multi-homing. In other words, let us say that what you really wanted Joe's garage to be is over here on this one where you have www.esoft.com/Joe. Okay? But Joe doesn't like that because that makes him look like a little guy in a big pond, and he wants it to be www.jgarage.com, and he wants that address to go there. Well, with DNS, I can't make that quite happen because with DNS, I can point him to this server, but he'll go here and get the eSoft homepage, and we want him to go here and get the Joe homepage. So you can't do that with DNS alone. So what we do is over on the iPad, make this the default.red, and in the file default.red, we put http://www.esoft.com/Joe. And that's the line in the redirect file over here. Now, when I go to www.jgarage.com, I come here, because that's where my DNS points. It points me here. I come here, it gets this redirect, and it goes back to the browser and tells the browser, go here. The browser will go ahead and go back and go to the leave the iPad, go to this other server, into the Joe directory, and we'll be at Joe's homepage.
What is the browser going to show us the link?
Depends on the browser. Most browsers will update the link so that you'll see the new link. Which won't make Joe as happy as it could be.
How much latency does that impart on response from the server?
Just about none. I mean, you see it happens. We'll show you some examples here if you want, but it doesn't take very long. It's real quick. The other way to do this, which is really much more what I would suggest, is do the publishing part of his pages over here and just do any CGIs or forms over here and refer them right out of the HTML links. Just point over to this guy. Then, when you go to Joe's Garage, it'll look like his homepage over here. The other option is to put only his home page here and make all of the links from the home page go into the directories over here. That way, when you go to joes.garage, right when you're first looking, you won't see the name change on the browser. It'll still be here. As you start clinking out of his page, it'll start going to the other server. You'll see it, but you won't be looking for it past the first one, and it'll almost make Joe look bigger. Because now Joe's all hooked up with all these different servers in his homepage. This must be cool. Joe doesn't have just one little stupid computer somewhere. So you can do this. This is the non-technical part of it. That's called the image and the presentation. And you just kind of have to keep your ear to the ground on what is it that sounds and feels cool.